Really quickly, we've got four incredible sponsors. Look, these four are always helping to support the podcast and continuing to help us pump out episodes. First up, Supacolor. Supacolor is the world's best heat transfer made for screen printers by screen printers. They understand the pressures and expectations of running a screen printing business. And that's why they pride themselves on being super fast and super easy. Supacolor's support, also awesome. Their quality, their new Gen 2 transfer, amazing. And Supacolor helps you make it. So use Printavo 15. That gets you 15% off your order. Multicraft. Look, go to Instagram, open up your app, type in Multicraft _daddy, and send Dave your email address. He's entering those in. He's giving stuff out every single week. PMI tape, and a bunch of other really cool stuff. So be able to send that. Check out their site and all the awesome products. They've been around for 50 years plus, providing our industry with top brands at competitive pricing. If you mention the Printavo Pod, that gets you 10% off your first order. Thanks, Multicraft. Easy Way. If you're spending hours cleaning dirty screens, that is a thing of the past with Easy Way screen printing and screen cleaning chemicals. Their innovative formulas are designed to work quickly and effectively so you can spend less time cleaning and more time creating. Plus, Easy Way is passionate about empowering printers of all skill levels. They offer helpful resources and expert advice to help you succeed in printing. Thanks, Easy Way and Alex and the team. You guys are awesome. Last but not least, GraphX Source. If you need a solution to improve efficiency and reduce costs in your art department, GraphX Source is there. They are industry leading. They have industry leading outsourcing options. And this is stuff like handling production art, you know, digitizing, SEPs, mockups, order entry, back office admin, bunch of that cool stuff. Campus Inc. has 5 full-time folks. So they are running big time and very ingrained with GraphX Source. And you can mention Printavo Pod 24. That gets you 50% off your first vector, SEP, or digitized order to give it a try. Thanks, GraphX. And let's jump into the episode.
What's going on?
How are we doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Good.
This is a little different of an episode.
I'm excited.
Our third wheel. Is he the third wheel?
I'm the third wheel.
You're the third wheel? Well, wheel 2 and wheel 3 are in. Wheel 1, we decided to just do our own thing today. I don't know why.
He's off surfing and enjoying life.
You know what's funny is I texted him this morning and said, "Hey, I need a link. I'm doing an interview with Just Kevin." And he's like, "Oh."
Little FOMO maybe?
Does he have FOMO?
I think.
Okay, so the reason, obviously, Kevin, you're one of our favorite guests on the podcast, a very close friend of Bruce and I, but you've been a sales coach to me personally, my company, and the rest of the industry, and we really wanted to just go into some topics that you teach every single day with your shops and just riff on them a little bit. I think these episodes get such good viewership because the tangibles you give are incredible. And so I think, yeah, do you want to get into it? I guess first, Kevin, you've been coaching shops for what, 5 years now?
Almost 7 years.
Seven?
Yeah.
And you are now full-time coaching shops.
Yeah. This industry just sucked me right in. So a little over 6 months ago, I've now pulled into this business full-time and started Sales Inc. and am now, yeah, all in on supporting shops.
And so just really quickly, can you give people that don't know you a little background on yourself? Either if you can name the companies you work for or some of the volume and things that you've done so that they just don't think you're, you know, some random dude just giving us sales tips.
Just some guy.
Just so, a car salesman? No.
Yeah. My whole career, almost 25 years actually, it pains me to say that, has been in sales leadership, mainly for early stage, high growth, tech software companies for the most part. Some venture backed, some bootstrapped. I've led sales organizations of 70 plus. I've helped companies grow from seed stage all the way to 30 million plus in revenue. I've just had a crazy career of working with early stage tech. Spent a lot of time starting to coach and mentor early stage entrepreneurs, which is how I met Bruce early on in Printavo. and how I met the industry. You know, he connected me with, you were one of the first shops that I started working with, and it's just snowballed from there. So to date, I've worked with well over 100 screen printers, from sub-million in revenue, all the way up to north of 50 million in revenue. So yeah, it's been an awesome ride.
You're sort of a legend at Campus Inc. I joke about this, but when my employees don't like what I have to say, they just call you.
Hey, Kevin, Steven said this. What do you think? Yeah, it's been cool, like cultivating the relationship and the partnership with Campus Inc. over the years. We started really strategic in like building sales process and building messaging and pitch and language, right? And then we started coaching some of the individual team members, and it's just morphed into this great partnership. I enjoy the team. I enjoy jumping on those calls, and yeah, it's been fun supporting them.
And I think what's interesting is now we're probably, what, 5-6 years in working with you, we have not had to hire a VP of sales. It's probably the last leadership role we're hiring for, simply yeah. because you've kind of filled that role of once a month, you know, cadences with the team and things like that. And being a second set of eyes and ears for me, I joke about it that sometimes you have to parent your shop a little bit. And totally. The fact that they can go to you and vent, and then you'll come to me and say, hey, well, maybe you should think of this or that. So, Kevin, one of the things early on, and I think probably one of the patterns we've seen in the industry, is splitting sales roles. And I feel like it comes up over and over and over again. Can you talk a little bit about the problem shops face with the roles they have in their shop, maybe giving too many responsibilities, and some of the challenges that you see?
Yeah, for sure. So most shops that I talk to have that like customer service, account manager, inside sales role. They're the order takers. They're taking the inbound opportunities. They're bringing them to close. They're quoting. They're sending mock-ups. And then once they become a customer, they're supporting them after the fact. So it's kind of like a few different, in most organizations, those roles are a lot of times separated. In shops, vast majority of the time, they're one role. I have found it's 30, 40 maybe shops that have tried to take that person that's an account manager inside sales role and split their duties and have them also outbound sell and go out, find new business, cold call, prospect, telemarket, knock on doors, send outbound email campaigns and try to sell. And almost all of them have been unsuccessful of taking that individual and having who is good at support and customer service and reactive stuff and have them now go out and build a book of business. It almost always fails.
Okay. So the myth is, hey, you know, and I think we try to do this, right? Milo's just answering phones.
Yeah.
She's taking orders and now Milo runs all of Campus Inc. But, hey, Milo, half your day, I want you to cold call and knock on doors. I want you to go out and I want you to email 30 people.
Yep.
What ends up happening? Why is that a crash and burn scenario? Why should shops not do that?
Yeah. And your instance that you just mentioned is very similar to almost all the shops that I talk to. It's they have bandwidth. You know, they're not fully utilized. Let's have them go do this, which it makes sense. It's logical to do that. What I find happens, mainly two things. One, they don't enjoy that work. It's not something that they like or that they're good at. Like, they don't like it. They're not good at it. It's hard. It's arduous. It's monotonous. It's painful. It's way different than the role that they're in. So because they don't enjoy it, one, and because they're not good at it, two, it usually falls flat. If a shop is going to do it, I would be really, really clear on this person has the intrinsic motivation. They're financially motivated. They will just grind. They're all good with just grinding. They've maybe done it before and have done it successfully. You got to make sure that a lot of those boxes are checked before you can take that customer service account manager, inbound seller, and push them into outbound and finding new business.
So is it a personality problem? Is it a work balance problem? Is it it's easier to answer emails that are coming in than pushing cold out?
All the above. We don't have the tooling technology set up to support them. We as shop owners haven't done that role and don't understand it and don't know how to support them. We don't have KPIs and metrics set up. All of the above is reasons why they typically aren't successful. And maybe we should take a step back and talk about how most sales organizations are run. Most sales organizations have that person that after the sale is closed, once they're a current customer, that supports account management or customer success, customer service. Then most sales organizations have an account executive, a closer, a seller that run the opportunity. The opportunity comes to them. they get it over the finish line, and they transition that relationship to the account manager or customer success. Then the third role that most sales organizations have is a business development role, an SDR, a BDR, sales development representative. Their role is solely to go outbound, create net new opportunities for that account executive, and open doors, create new opportunities for that account executive closer to go close that business. So, and we don't have that in Chops. Like, every tech company on the planet has three distinct sales customer service roles. It's not all one. It's specialized. They're good at it. They enjoy doing that work. And that's what they're paid for and compensated for. We've got kind of all of that into one now.
And I think it's because our industry is lucky. We work with word of mouth, relationships, just business totally. Comes back. But if you don't have a dedicated sales organization, the growth that you are relying on is purely relationship and reputation.
Totally. Yeah. It's hope that we have good relationships and hope that we get the business that we need. It's an interesting economic environment right now. So I think it's super important to maybe own that and try to drive a little bit more predictable revenue to the business versus just letting it come in and hoping that it's the right.
Okay. So let's just say, okay, a shop listening to this is like, I only have one salesperson right now. They're at the front desk. I can't afford to hire two, right? What should that, if I only can afford to have one employee handling customer service, I want them to do a little bit of outbound sales. Should the owner come in and do outbound sales? Should they be focused on really good success and reorders? Like, how do you still really make the best of it knowing that you can only have one employee right now?
Yeah, there's a couple options and a couple ways to handle that. You can provide that seller with support, tee up opportunities for them in a couple different ways. Like, for me personally, I don't outbound prospect myself to shops to try to drive and build my business. I have my VA do it. So I build the outbound campaigns, the email language that I want her to use. She builds and curates a list. She does all that research. She uses the technology tools to automate outbound campaigns, and she just campaigns shops all day. And if someone replies and says, hey, Kevin, I'm interested, she connects them with me, sets a time, and then I run the opportunity. So she's never talking to shops or managing it, and I pay her $6.25 an hour to be my outsourced business development team. So that's option one. There's another option of just outsourcing lead gen. So you can hire a lead gen company, a door opening service, to set up opportunities for you. They've got a team of business developers that will do it for you. It's option three to hire someone to do it. But if you, in your instance, you only have that one person doing it, maybe it is the shop owner that's taking that on. Let me give you one example of that. Our friend Kevin Oakley at Stoked On, he just immersed himself in sales. Not a lot of experience prior to that, but figured out technology tooling, figured out automation. He spent hours and hours and hours every week in the business trying to figure out outbound outreach. And we worked together on process and messaging and tooling, and then he ran with it. He got it dialed and then was at a point where, all right, I know this really well now. And then he hired someone to do that outbound work and support the inbound customer success seller that they had. So there's not one right answer. There's a lot of different ways to skin it. But I don't think the answer is always, what shops often lean to is take that person that's in there that's already closing business and push them out to go outbound.
Gotcha. The example that I always bring is like, you know, your customer service, customer success, they're the ones pumping gas for people coming to the gas station. You need to have a trucker coming to bring that gas station fuel, right? Like every single day. Now, you talked a little bit about lead generation, immersing yourself in the business. How important, if you're going to start an outbound sales process, how important is it for the owner to get involved with it? Like, real talk, when you've seen shops be successful, how important is it for the owner to get involved?
So they have to be involved, just like any operating procedure change or process or strategy within the business. I mean, you've lived it within your organization. You know how important it is that you've got your stamp on it and you're behind it and you're supporting the team. Doesn't necessarily mean that the owner has to be the one executing on that strategy, but there has to be some support, guidance, oversight, and knowledge by leadership to know what's going on and what the expectations should be and what the metrics should be. And with sales, it's numbers. So like, there should be those metrics. So there has to be some involvement for sure.
You know, I think incredible sales leaders are willing to get in the trenches with their team, and they're willing to knock on doors with their team. And I feel like if you're going to do outbound sales, you kind of have to put your crazy person hat on a little bit.
Totally.
You know, for me, it was knocking on doors to paint houses, and I would go out with my team in the snow, look like an idiot, and knock on doors together because I would show them, if I can get a lead and it's 0 degrees and raining, you can get a lead and it's 0 degrees and raining. Now, I think that's kind of where you come in, right? And so if I knew nothing about sales, I would say, Kevin, I'm ready to put my crazy salesperson hat on. Teach us.
Let's go do
but
it.
I,
yeah.
But I do think the owner should be involved, because I feel like if you kind of just like dump them and say, hey, go watch this and try to sell, it feels like it creates a little bit of like a void.
Totally.
Yeah, go ahead.
And there's some examples of that I've worked with shops on recently. So like friend of the pod, Justin Lawrence, Oklahoma Sure Company. He's been on here multiple times. He just hired an outbound seller maybe 3-4 months ago. And Justin and I have worked together. We built his sales process. He's got the approach and like the framework that's needed, but he doesn't have that. He's never had that seller to go out and really hammer on it and go do it, right? So he finally brought someone on. And he's been incredibly involved. He, another person on his operations team, and I, all three of us have been supporting that new outbound seller. So over the top of like a lot of support, a lot of guidance, a lot of oversight. I want to touch on a couple things that we found as they brought in the seller, and what a couple levers that I'm starting to see as really, really critical for success in launching like a new outbound seller in this process. One being organization. There's technology and tooling that can help with this, right? Like CRM, that's what it's for. It's to help organize your outbound outreach and get that dialed in. So critical that the new seller is organized. They've got their agenda. They know what they need to do. They've got their leads. They've got the tools that they're going to use, and they've got their process dialed in. So organization, super critical. The second is like that oversight. So you mentioned, how involved does the business owner have to be? Yes, if it's not the business owner, there's got to be someone that's managing that individual, that's meeting with them every week. They've got a weekly one-on-one. They're reviewing metrics every other day. They're helping to, you know, reduce friction in their process in their day-to-day. So that oversight is important. And then finally, activity. If the activity isn't there, they're not going to be successful, period. I don't know if I created this, or if I stole this quote from someone, but failure in sales is almost always tied directly to a lack of prospecting. So I'm going to say that I created that. Failure in sales is almost always tied directly to a lack of prospecting. If they aren't going outbound aggressively, proactively, direct, targeted, not going to be successful in the role. It's not just like deals can come in and shops can grow. We've proven it, right? But if we really want to grow and have an outbound sales organization, it has to be tied to activity. So those three things, org, oversight, activity, we found to be most successful in launching.
Let's talk about activity. So at Campus Inc., we have this saying that says activities yield results, right? Let's hone in on exactly the activities. Our sales leaders are responsible to determine the strategy or the type of activities that our sales team is going to do. It's up to our sales team to play the playbook of activities, track their activities, and then it's up to our sales leaders to determine, you know, if the results actually align to what we thought. And the saying that we had is, if the activities are done, but the results aren't there, it's a sales leadership problem.
Yeah.
If the activities aren't done and the results aren't there, it's an effort and management, and yep. You know, they actually didn't do it. Can you talk about activity tracking, KPIs? What are the things that you are measuring or you're installing for shops to measure on a daily basis when it comes to activities?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be sophisticated. And like, you know, think about the Google Sheets that you're running within your team. It's not like that's this robust, you know, analytics model. It's seriously a Google Sheet that has, I usually bucket it in activities or inputs, and then outputs or outcomes. Activities being calls, emails, visits, social media connections, any outbound outreach, any touches. And those activities are going to result in outcomes, new opportunities created, new meetings set and held, new jobs quoted, new revenue, right? So what I love about sales is like it's numbers driven. It's quantitative. If the activities are there and it's good quality activity too. Just not just activity, but quality activity is there. The output's going to be there. And everything is ratio driven. How many activities, how many touches does it take to get a decision maker on the line? How many decision maker contacts does it take to get a new meeting with someone? How many net new first meetings does it take to get a job quoted? How many quotes does it take to get out to hit the quota or the revenue amount we want to hit? All that stuff can be ratio driven. And the more that, to your point, as you're tracking this data, the managers and the team members, the more that you track and manage, the better data you're going to have. And you're going to know, I've got 100-to-1 call to meeting set ratio. So I need to make 100 calls to get in front of one person. Like, it's all just numbers and math, and it's, yeah, it's quantitative in nature.
Now you don't need, you kind of said something, you don't need fancy tools to track your metrics. Are you saying that the sales individuals are hitting a button? Are they like clocking it in every time they make a call? And at the end of the day, they're putting in their stats. Like, yeah. How do you keep people honest? Is it about honesty or is it just consistency? Talk to us about that.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of both. So most of the shops that I work with will have a CRM in place to manage those activities. Really hard to track, you know, maybe I should have said you don't need sophisticated modeling to track. You kind of do need a CRM. You could use a Google sheet or an Excel sheet and just like track the activities and do your ticks on the calls you made. But I do think just a base CRM will allow you to track that data. And CRMs do have insight dashboards and scorecards to measure and show those activities. But I still, even if I have a CRM, I still have a Google Sheet that's one place that we track all those metrics. And I like the manual process of a salesperson at the end of their week taking all of their activities and the output from those activities and taking that data from a CRM and manually plug it in to a Google Sheet. Because if they performed well, they're excited about it, they put those numbers in and it feels good and I want that muscle memory. But if they didn't hit their numbers and they didn't put in the effort and they didn't have a good week, I also want them to dump that into the sheet because it stings. It's painful.
There's this thing, I think it's in psychology, it's called the Hawthorne effect. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
The idea here is if you start tracking something, your natural response will raise awareness and take action without having to do anything. So the perfect example is when someone wants to lose weight and they go to the doctor and say, you know, I'm trying all these diets, they're not working. The first thing they'll say is, why don't you just track your calories? Because when you start tracking your calories, you're naturally not going to grab an extra cookie or, those extra calories, and you're going to just start being more conscious. And so sometimes activity tracking, I think what you're saying is, just by putting in a number, whether it's manual or not, whether it's by entering in something at the end of the day, you are accountable to your stat. It's kind of like CrossFit. I don't know if you've ever done CrossFit. I feel like CrossFit, people are crazy with their whiteboards and everything like that. But it's the same concept, right?
Yeah. It's that muscle memory. It's that motion. It's the same thing with shops starting to do outbound, right? Like, have them start, just do it. Start doing it. Start prospecting and going outbound to your current customer base before you go cold net new. It's building that memory. I love that.
We have a platform for our students, and on this platform, students enter in leads. And a funny ratio that we take at the end of each month is we take in the total leads that the students put in, and we take the total sales that the students generated, because really they're supposed to put in every lead. And we found out that our lead was worth something like $200. Like, it was insane. Now, is every lead worth $200? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is, the next month the team goes, hey, what was our lead worth last month? Right. And they started to just say like, oh, our lead is actually worth something. Okay, I'm going to get my students to put in more leads. Okay, let's switch gears for a second. I want to talk. So you talked about some options for outbound. You said if you can't afford to hire someone, the owner can get involved. You can use VAs or you can use a lead gen service. In your opinion, of those three, where should you start? VA, lead gen, owner, or call you?
I'm a heavy proponent of, and in my opinion, outbound is most successful when it's campaign driven, meaning it's not just someone putting a couple calls in or sending some emails. Like, my outbound outreach strategy with my VA, it works, but it doesn't drive a huge velocity. But I also, like most shops, have a lot of inbound people coming to me as well. So I don't need a heavy outbound campaign structure. If I was doing it correctly and following a lot of my advice, my VA would also be making calls. They'd also be sending social media connections, LinkedIn requests, you know, Instagram DMs potentially. And if they were local, knocking on doors of those clients that I wanted. So I think that most shops, if they went and focused outreach from a campaign perspective, meaning there's 10 or 15 touches, email call, LinkedIn connection requests, Instagram DM, call, email. If they built that approach and had the messaging and language being targeted, not just like, hey, you want to buy shirts, but we're helping coffee shops in the Milwaukee area with the best retail merch. We're helping them drive more revenue to their coffee shops, like really detailed and specific language that's tied to that person, that niche, that target that we're reaching out to. The campaign structure is way more effective than just dropping some flyers off, making a couple calls here and there, just doing emails. So that campaign approach, I think, is most effective. Now, you can use that campaign with a VA. My VA is in the Philippines, and I don't feel comfortable with her calling into the U.S., so I'm not doing that. So if you have an onshore VA or someone that you feel confident with their English language, all good, do it. You could do that campaign approach with an outsourced lead gen service as well. Most of those companies will do all of the above. Some are only focused on email. Some will do all the above. So you can check that out. And then if you're hiring someone, absolutely, like, build that campaign structure. If a shop is smaller and this is their first sales hire, I might dip my toe in one of those lead gen services and just see how that works before maybe going full bore and hiring someone to come on. But if your shop's $1 million, $1.5 million, $2 million, I mean, just bring on a person. Justin said something interesting. He said, even if this new cold net new seller doesn't work out, it's not all for naught. Like, if they don't drive a bunch of net new opportunity creation and we get close a bunch of deals out of it, they're still adding value because Oklahoma Shirt Company is getting awareness. We're getting our name thrown out there by email, by phone, by visiting. It's helping our business. So it's not, even if it isn't uber successful, it's still going to help us. It's still going to market the shop.
Yeah, seeing that the Thunder lost, he needs as much exposure as he can now, because you know, every home game, 20,000 shirts just wasn't enough. Go Mavs. One thing you said there, or like you didn't say there, was, and I kind of asked, is can the owner do it? How realistic is it that the owner is actually going to do consistent outbound at scale with high velocity?
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Don't even try it. It's not going to happen. It's going to fall flat. You're going to be unsuccessful. You're going to spin your wheels. You're managing and running the business. You're stretched thin. You're doing everything. Unless like you feel that you can delegate and you've got leadership in place, you've got someone managing production that you have 100% confidence in. And if you took a month vacation, production would still hum. Great. And if you feel like you've got management and leadership over other customer success, internal business processes, admin, HR, financial, then try to dive into it. But what I found is you can't just dip your toe in and do a little bit of sales for an hour or two a day. And then come June and July, you're crazy busy, and then you're not doing any. And then all of a sudden January and February come and you can put a little bit more time into it. But you know how our business cycles, you're not going to be successful doing it. I have seen shops be successful doing it. Like Kevin Oakley's a perfect example. He lived in it. He put time and effort into it. He had a business partner. Business partner was focused on other sides of the business. It allowed him to step in and really dial in sales. So, but yeah, in my experience, very, very few shops have been successful when the owner says, all right, I'm going to go out and outbound sell.
Okay. So then you said something there about Justin Lawrence and how it was still a good payoff because, you know, even if they struck out every single day, people were learning about Oklahoma Shirt Company. At what point, you know, should a salesperson, let's just say, break even, pay themselves off? Yeah, what's that cycle look like? How many months do I need to be committed to a salesperson not bringing in enough? Like, what's that window look like?
Yeah, I get asked this a lot. I actually want to start collating some of this data that I have from the shops that I've worked with. I think it would be a really, really interesting study and report of sellers that have come in that are in a true outbound role, that are bringing in business, what that, call it rep payback, what that rep payback period is. And what do we, you know, how do we ramp up and graduate them into a full quota, into a, you know, full revenue book? Our industry isn't that sophisticated, right? There's no reason why someone shouldn't be able to really know and understand what we do and be able to sell a meeting. Because really, when we're going outbound, we're not selling shirts. We're not selling decoration. We're selling time to get in front of them. There's no reason that after maybe a month and a half, 2 months, that they should be really dialed and in full-blown outbound prospecting stage, maybe even sooner than that too, for them to run opportunities to be able to quote and know the different services that we provide and the garments and the products we use and the processes we use. Like, yeah, maybe 2-3 months to really grasp all of that and be able to run full sales opportunities. It depends on your expectations of that seller. It depends on your market. It depends on the experience of that seller. But I think after 6 months, you should start to see some pretty consistent revenue coming in from those sellers. Think about it. Like, they're starting to outreach month one, late month one, month two, 5 months in. Like, that name, the shop name, the person's name, and what you all do, shirts, decoration, that hits the prospects over and over and over again. They've got them running in multiple campaigns. Hopefully you're starting to drive a little bit of response by the fifth, sixth month. Payback's a different story, right? Like, you've invested in that person to get their salary and commission, you know, to get them up to that point. You know, in most normal sales organizations, it's 9 months to a year really to see payback. This is not an immediate, like, I'm going to hire a seller and they're going to start ripping $50,000 a month in revenue and they're going to pay for themselves. It's not typically what we see. But if they stay consistent and you hit the oversight, the organization, and the activity, those three things that we talked about, they're going to be successful. It's a numbers game. There's no reason that if they're doing structured, good activity, that it's not going to result in closed deals.
And so I think as shop owners, we're pretty impatient, just a little bit.
Yeah.
We hire a salesperson and we think they should start doing this. What the heck? Nothing's happening. 4 months later, man, they're only bringing in, you know, they're bringing in garbage orders, or they're just selling crap, bottom of the barrel orders. I think something you said that was interesting there is their ramp up period. There's like different levels. And I think like quotas, if you will, you said like the first thing is just learning about the company. Second, maybe setting up meetings, right? Third is being able to quote. The last one is actually being able to close deals. And so how do you talk about compensation if you can't compensate them out of the gate on revenue, right? Because you know that their revenue ramp up period is going to take some time. How do you put a comp structure together for the first year of a salesperson? What do you base it off of?
Yeah. And if you haven't done it before, it's super hard, right? So that's why I always coach and train the shop owners to communicate to those salespeople that they're hiring that, hey, this is going to be a mess. We're going to get this wrong. It's, you know, it's either going to be too rich for you or too rich for the shop, and we're going to have to make it right. So it's super challenging, and there's not a silver bullet here. I've had some shops that will do a guarantee on commissions for the first few months, knowing that that seller isn't going to sell anything for the first few months, and likely they were selling somewhere before and were hopefully successful in doing that, and they were earning commissions. So salespeople have to take a step back, and then it's challenging, right? Like, they got to take a pay cut to start a new sales job almost always. So some will do guarantees. You know, you can do some analysis and figure out, all right, let's hope that they get $10,000 worth of orders month three, you know, $15,000, $20,000 a month four, and like stair step their quota up to whatever plateau you think they would need to be at. You just got to do some math and kind of just model it out and figure out what that looks like. Here's the thing, though. Think about the return and the payback. What I love about the work that I do is even if I can level up a shop by 1 or 2 points, they could get a deal that they didn't get otherwise, and it can really impact their shop. Think about all those shops that have that one key marquee client that's 25, 30% of their revenue. Most of us have it. Most of us have like those accounts or two that are really, really a big part of our revenue. If we bring in that salesperson and they find us that account, man, they have paid themselves back time and time again, especially if we're getting reorders and we're getting more revenue from that customer and they grow with us, which most of our clients do. It can have a really, really big impact and drive pretty quick ROI.
So let's talk about ROI on investing in people versus investing in equipment, investing in marketing, right? So like a dollar to buy a press, a dollar to buy a lead, a dollar to hire a salesperson. How does what mistakes do you see? How do you see, maybe what's the bias? What's interesting coming from tech world versus our industry? Why do we have it all wrong?
Yeah, I don't know. I think because we've been just blessed with getting a bunch of inbound orders, and we're gluttonous and just taking all this inbound leads and taking advantage of it. Like, we've never had to either market really effectively or sell really effectively. We've been able to grow to, you know, $1-3 million businesses off of doing none of that. But in my experience, getting to that next level really needs that next level of push.
But why do you think shops have no hesitation to buy a $100,000 press, but hesitate to overhire employees, maybe?
Yeah, I love your, if I had $100,000 to invest in a piece of equipment at my shop, what would it be? And your answer is always a salesperson. I love that. So I think the hesitation is just the unknown. We don't know what that looks like. Most shop owners haven't sold. They haven't been sales leaders. They haven't hired salespeople. I think it's just, it's challenging. You know, recruiting and hiring and onboarding and training and developing and managing any employee in the shop is challenging. But when it's something that we've never done or never hired before, which salespeople is that for most shop owners, I think it's just really challenging. But I do think it's like, it can be done. We've seen it. I've seen it be done at multiple shops of multiple sizes and structures. It's doable. You just got to build some systems and jump in and attack it.
Cool. Coolest thing you've seen a shop do. Do you have any nuggets of, obviously you work with a lot of different shops. They have come up with some pretty unique ideas. Any cool things you've seen some shops do?
Yeah. Recently, I run that Sales Inc. membership community. One of the members, her name is Kim Shepherd. She runs a company, Decora Advertising. She did some kitting and merch boxes that were uber successful. So her strategy and approach was, she started an email campaign to her target demographic. For her, it was schools. So she was going to schools and saying, hey, if you can, to the like administrator, or it was the administrator, the athletic director, or a couple other roles and titles, she would send them emails and ask them for logo and brand guidelines. And in return, she would provide them with a kit and samples to give them an idea of some of the merch that they could create. So essentially, we're going to give you a free $150 kit of merch. You don't have to buy from us. If you just want to use it and keep it for yourself, what are your sizes? So she would get all that information and ask for logos. She would then kit up this $150 quality kit of, you know, a tote bag, shirt, hoodie, hat, whatever, some hard goods, some promo. She would personally deliver it to that individual, start to build that relationship, start to talk to them, and then make the ask of what's next. Almost all, except for like this one huge opportunity, she won after that. So she's starting to sell these now, and now it's not just selling shirts, it's selling kits. So she's selling kits to these schools, and, you know, insert any market or geography or vertical that you're selling into. Anyone could use kitting for employees, for current customers, for their students, whatever, right? She's just knocked it out of the park with this strategy. And she's using like ChatGPT to create a really solid email for it as well. It's just it's a strategy that I've seen work really well, kitting and boxing in general.
So literally, she's getting the logo from the company and delivering their own merch?
Yep. In a nice curated box and kit, and saying, here you go, it's on us. I hope you like it. We do all of this stuff. If we can help your organization with anything, just reach out to us. Really, really non-aggressive sell. And they almost all, she has like a 95% close rate on these kits. Almost all of them are reaching back out to her.
How many is she doing a month? This is super cool.
I don't know the answer to that. Like, okay. This is hard. This is high touch. This is uber personalized. I'm not doing these $150 kits for, you know, Kevin's barbecue rib shack down the street. Like, not going to happen, right? But if it's a large enough organization that fits our vertical, I'm doing it for sure.
And so you have to think about you have to think about the addressable market here before you're going to do something super high touch. But if you did 10 of those a month and you went to mid-level companies that had, you know, 1,000 plus employees or 500 to 1,000 employees, good chance you're running their company store. Because, like, how cool would it be if someone sent me a box of Campus Inc. swag and I was like, oh, this is sick. I'm going to put a hat on right now and just wear it. Guys, did you? There's stuff here. Right?
And it's got Campus Inc.'s logo on the box. It's got, you know, like, it's branded. It's something that you instantly think, all right, here's how I can use this to help my business.
Wow. That's like it's a pretty sweet investment. I had the Styles family. I was working with them. They went to kind of a chamber business event, and they got, you know, 30 minutes to present. And we said, okay, how are we going to bring the holy shit factor? We're going to customize a piece for every one of the members that's there. So instead of their giveaway just being, you know, whatever swag, they got a surprise gift box with their company. Same exact thing, super high touch. It was super hard to do, but everyone was so grateful for it. And, like, you don't know when that's going to pay off.
Yeah, yeah.
But it feels really good doing it.
Love that. Love that. Another nugget that I've seen shops start to do, asking in the discovery process, so the initial conversation that we have with the client, asking them their shirt size and just saying, if I ever want to send you something in the future, I'd love to know. And then once we start to see what orders come in from them, if they're only ordering t-shirts, like, send them a hoodie, send them a jacket, right? Send them something with their logo on it. We already got a vectored image of theirs, like, throw a logo on it. It's it's just another nice touch to put
you know what vector is, Kevin. Look at you. Look at you. You're not just, you know what vector is. You know the, you know the buzzwords.
The print nerd tech, you know, I love it.
Okay.
What one other nugget that I've seen recently that I think has been really interesting to watch and follow. Connor McDonald runs St. Louis Sherco, or Sherco out of St. Louis. His shop is a little bit bigger, 4 or 5 million, I think. He ended up hiring a sales manager. So he had, I think, 4 or 5 different account managers. One of them really wanted to go into sales. So he brought in kind of a pseudo selling manager to oversee all of account management, customer service, and sales, and go cut his teeth and sell alongside of this other seller. So it was an interesting strategy of not Connor going in and managing the sales organization, but actually hiring someone that has been a sales manager and has overseen salespeople. Pretty big investment, but if you're going to go in, like, do it right, invest in it, you know, focus on that. The one thing in their strategy that they did differently than most shops that I see is they had a heavy focus on going outbound into their geography first. So they would jump in the car, the sellers, and they would have, here are the people that we're going to go visit. Here's the people we want to ask for. Here's the information we know. And here's the most efficient route with the least windshield time of all the people that we want to visit. We're going to go mainly drop off just one page printed out document of Sherco and the value we provide. Not screen, DTG, embroidery. No one knows what any of that is. Quality, turnaround time, fair price, right? Like, the value that we can provide. Or they would drop off just samples and start talking to people and gathering information. Then they would take all of those leads and they then started to build campaigns, calling, emailing, LinkedIn, social media. But it started with this heavy door knocking, canvassing approach that some might think is old school. Like, I don't want to loiter. I don't want to go knock on doors. Shit works. Like, he's proven. It took a little bit of time to get, like, the wheels turning. But after people see you, Kevin's in my office, I got a face to a name. I know who he is. He dropped me off this flyer or this cool shirt. Now he's calling me, emailing me. Yeah, I've got this opportunity. I'm going to give it to him versus someone else that I don't know and haven't talked to.
That takes so much resilience and grit to want to get in a car and actually go visit people. But every time you do it, it works.
But if you've got the right personality and you enjoy doing that, and there's that thrill of that slight win or victory, and they're incentivized and motivated by that monetary compensation, and they know that they're that much closer to a win. Yeah, it sucks, but, like, if you can get that little victory, it's worth it.
Here's a hiring nugget. If I am hiring a salesperson and they did one of the following things in their past and lasted more than 6 months, I know they're going to be successful. I'm going to give one. Door-to-door fertilizer lawn spray, the fertilizer guys that sell lawn care door-to-door fertilizer, animals.
Yep.
Vector Cutco guys that sold knives.
Vector Marketing,
back in the day.
Cutco knives. Yep.
Third one would be if you worked at Groupon, Yelp, or any of those companies where you just had to hit thousands of calls a month. Yep. What would be some other? Copy sales. If you sold copiers.
I sold copiers for 8 years. Copiers, fax machines, printers. Oh, door to door, downtown Chicago is the worst. All of that, like selling solar to people, selling mortgages. Like there's a lot of those roles early on where you just had to grind it out. Recruiting is a great example. There's a lot of different roles that people had done early in their career. And if they were successful in it, I think that translates well into, selling for the shop.
Yeah, Northwestern Mutual people, if they spent time selling the insurance. Financial. The difference is if you find one of those candidates, those are coming, you know, those employees are coming from a lot of structure. It's basically a video game they're playing, a sales video game. If you don't have the structure, you have to be very careful because you can't just expect them to jump in and be the same salesperson they were.
It's a good point. When shops ask me about like recruiting and hiring salespeople, what should they look for? Almost always I'm pushing the communication and the language of, hey, you have to tell them that this is going to be very little oversight. They're going to have to be a self-starter. They're going to have to just grind. I'm not going to be able to hold their hand. I don't understand and know this. They're going to have to run it and own it. And for some sellers, some salespeople, that's super exciting. I get to build this business. I'm the first one in this seat. I can potentially grow this and maybe even hire people underneath me to keep this thing rolling. But other sellers that want sales enablement and marketing and like name recognition and all the support and guidance, that scares them off. So being really communicative of that up front and letting them know that this is needed, I think is really important.
So to your point, sales development might be a little bit different than actually, you know, like building a sales org versus actually running in a sales org are two completely different things.
For sure.
Gotcha. Okay. We've got a little bit of time left. Now that you've almost, it's going to be your year, almost your anniversary of going full time. Can you tell us a little bit about Sales Inc., what you've been building, a little bit about this community? You're running different cohorts. You don't let me into it because I guess me and Bruce would troll it, I guess. I don't know. But could you tell us a little bit about what you're working on? That's a little underground.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just rebranded the Set Sales name to Sales Inc. So it's sales.ink. And I've kind of bucketed under three different offerings. The first one, which is what I've always done in the industry, is just one-to-one coaching. So I'm continuing to work with shops one-on-one, supporting them, coaching, helping them build sales process and scripting and helping them with their outreach strategy and helping them recruit, hire, onboard, train salespeople. So that's the first. Second is the membership cohort that I've been running now for a little over a year. We've got two cohorts live. The third goes live in June or July. So it's 15 non-competitive geography shops, either salespeople or shop owners that get together. So one of Steven's sales leaders is in the second cohort of Sales Inc. So she connects with these 14 other shops. We meet twice a month. It's part me delivering content, but part the group supporting one another and sharing sales tips, tricks, practices, and strategies overall. So Slack channel, we just communicate heavily and help them grow sales. And then the third I'm super excited about is I'm taking a lot of the content that I have developed and I use in my one-to-one coaching, and I'm building that into just coursework. So some shops, as they're growing, might not be able to afford hiring a consultant to come in and work one-to-one with them. This is an opportunity for them to take a lot of that content, self-serve it, review a bunch of videos and a bunch of content. So it's Sales Inc. Academy is that third component. That will be up and live and operational very soon within the next few weeks. So I'm pumped about that. So thanks for letting me to.
So there's always a, we have to give you the shameless plug, but there's always a spot for you to start now in the Sales Inc. ecosystem. And so you can buy coursework for your team. You can then buy a membership for your team. And that membership in a Sales Inc. is owners or employees. So like for me, Jenna, who's a sales leader, I bought it for her so she can be part of Kevin's cohort. And then the last one is the one-to-one coaching. Right. Which is obviously the most intense, but not everyone can get you.
Yeah. I don't have so much time.
Anything else you got for us, Kevin, This has been super, super helpful. If there is one thing that shops can take away from listening to this episode, because I think we just hit 48 minutes of just bangers, what is the one piece of advice you could give shops that are listening to this?
Yeah, I think just like taking the initiative and diving in. If improving sales and trying to go out and find more sales and drive more predictable revenue to the business is important to you, you got to focus on it. You got to dive in. You got to put the time and effort and investment into it. This can't just be like dip your toe in and hope that it works. So if there are shops that want to execute on some of this stuff, like you gotta invest time, effort, and energy into making this better and improving that side of the business.
Kevin, this is awesome. You can go to sales.inc, kevin@sales.inc, kevin@setsales.co. You know how to get a hold of Kevin.
Kevin@sales.inc.
INK, that's a great domain name. God, that's awesome.
Steven bought me that domain, God, probably 3 years ago, and just held it over my head. He's like, when are you going to start your full-time sales consulting business and screen printing? And it happened. Sweet. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you taking the time.
Awesome. Talk soon.
Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.